Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm Lauren Williams, a consultant here at Student Loan Planner, and today I'm joined by my girl Megan McGuire, and we're going to be talking all the mistakes that you should not make in 2023. We want to ditch some of those misconceptions about what people are prone to do that kind of mess up the whole year, and then you kind of look back on you like, I wish I coulda, woulda, shoulda. We are still at the beginning of the year, and there's a lot of opportunity for you to optimize your finances, but also there's some things you should avoid doing and some things you actually need to do. Otherwise, you're going to be looking back and saying, this was a huge mistake. So, Megan, welcome to the show. Let's jump in.
Thank you. I'm excited. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about all financial planning topics today, not just student loans. So we'll touch on some student loan mistakes, of course, but we'll be also talking about other financial planning things because it, you know, usually at the beginning of the year, top of the year, you've got new goals, maybe new financial goals, usually new financial goals. So let's talk about, you know, the mistakes that we can avoid. But first, we wanted to touch on, just since we've been talking a lot about this new repay plan, or the revamped repay plan, and just some of the changes that are still kind of pending. We've been getting a lot of questions about, you know, should I wait to book a consultation? If I'm interested in working with you to put together my student loan plan, should I be waiting? And we are kind of in a holding pattern right now with just figuring out if this new revamped plan is going to come out, waiting on the decision to see if one-time cancellation is going to happen. But there are still a lot of reasons why it makes sense to book, even if we don't know exactly what's going to be playing out, because there's a lot of proactive things we can do, right?
Yeah, I had a call just the other day where someone was super excited by the end of it because they didn't have any plan at all for their student loans. And one of the big things that was a topic for them was like home buying. They thought that they were not going to be able to ever buy a home because their student loan balance was so large. They had no kind of real clear plan to be able to buy the home. So we talked through tips to be able to, you know, get saved up appropriately. What's the proper amount for a down payment? But also, like, how does home buying work in light of your student loans? They had no idea about how the income driven plans work and how it's actually not going to stop you from being able to purchase a home. So it was a great call and they were really, really happy.
That's good. And we do have a couple blog articles and a few YouTube videos about, you know, how to purchase a home when you have lots of student loan debt. Our website is also a great resource for finding a mortgage lender. If you're a doctor of some practicing profession, so not necessarily an MD, but also dentists, health professionals could potentially look into these types of mortgages. But there's a resource on our website you could check out for those types of loans as well and information about them. Talking about just benefits of booking a consultation still now, I mean, we're still seeing a lot of people with PSLF questions. So the PSLF waiver, as we know, expired October 31st, but there is kind of that backdoor way of us being able to get access to some of those PSLF waiver benefits as long as you're still working in a public service capacity. So if you're someone who's thinking, oh my goodness, I hope I didn't miss the boat on what I needed to do, you may not have. There may be some things that you could do right now to make sure that you're getting your payments counted up correctly. You know, if there's any troubleshooting that you need to do, that's stuff that we can cover on our consultation. If there's any red flags that we need to address right now before it's absolutely too late, which I think is going to be May 1st or at the very latest, maybe the summer, as some of these new IDR waiver changes come into play, then we could definitely dive into those things as well with when it comes to PSLF.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about that too as one of the reasons that, you know, people should book a consultation in just a second. But while we're talking about the public service loan forgiveness piece of it, is maybe you're new to public service loan forgiveness. You heard about the program, all these other changes, you're fresh out of school, all these other changes have happened, and you're coming out of school into COVID forbearance. You're coming out of school into a bunch of changes, and you don't really understand what you need to do to sign up for public service. That is yet another time that you can still benefit greatly from booking a consultation now. We can explain how the program works, how you get signed up, all the things you need to know to make sure that you're getting started on the right track when payments do pick back up.
Getting it right from the beginning. Yeah. Another thing I've seen a lot of lately is I've been getting some consultations with folks that have been reading our newsletter. They may be listening to our podcasts, watching our YouTube videos, but we're still finding ways to save them a ton of money because maybe there was a disconnect on a certain topic where they thought something wasn't applicable to them, but it was. So for example, I had a case just this past week where someone didn't realize that they had those older FFEL loans, those family federal education loans. They were with Navient, which is one of the older federal student loan servicers. So they just always thought they had federal loans. They didn't really understand the difference between the loan types. And they scheduled a consultation because their payment was getting to be too high. And they were trying to figure out, you know, hey, I've been paying on this for so long. The payment is just getting higher. My income's growing, but the payment is getting to be pretty large. What can I do? And I was like, oh my gosh, you are a perfect candidate for the income-driven repayment waiver, the IDR waiver we've been talking about. You know, this person had over 20 years of payment history for some graduate loans. So she'll have a little bit longer to go towards forgiveness, potentially. She could already be there depending on that prior history. But in my mind, I was like, oh my gosh, where are we failing people? Like, how can we like make it more clear? Like, you need to do this because that opportunity to consolidate is supposed to expire May 1st. So if we didn't chat, that could have been a balance that this person held on to for much, much longer than a couple years, you know? So
yeah, we're spreading the good news as much as we can. We've got the podcast. We've got the emails going out. We've got the YouTube channel. Like, we are literally shouting from the rooftops. And we do. We give a ton of free information away because you can take control of your finances. You can take control of your student loan plan yourself. But a lot of times it's overwhelming for people. Like you said, you're getting a little bit of the information here, a little bit there. And that's why the consultation becomes really, really valuable. And to your point, that person was probably also on income-based repayment because they had the FFEL loans. And I'm seeing a ton of people that are coming to me that are still on income-based for various reasons. So people that are single, so could easily be on revised pay as you earn, don't have any plans to get married, been single for a bit, people who have borrowed after October 1st of 2007 and are eligible for the pay-as-you-earn plan, but they have this disconnect. Like we always say, income-driven repayment, IDR is the name of the program. And then under that umbrella, you have IBR, ICR, pay and repay, which gets a little confusing.
Yeah, it does.
But the number of people who get confused and just like, oh, I want that income-based thing because that's what everybody refers to it as. And they picked income-based repayment, even if they were eligible for something better because they thought they had to choose income based. They didn't realize that pay and repay were income driven. So that has been a way that I'm still getting all the time. People, I'm like, okay, we've got to change your plan immediately.
Yeah.
We're going to save you some money today. So
yeah,
I think that's a good segue into talking a little bit about the when you borrowed piece of the puzzle and why people should not be waiting to book a consultation, depending on the time frame in which they borrowed, because there are some decisions they're going to have to make before this new plan becomes finalized.
Yep. So the new repay plan, if it's approved as proposed, it would be phasing out the plan pay as you earn, which that has been one of our favorite plans for a number of reasons, but it has the opportunity to be going away. Now, that does not mean that if you're already on it, you can be kicked off. They can't do that. But it does mean that if you're eligible for it, you know, and this is for people who had borrowed after 2007. So October 1st, 2007. Think back to when you borrowed your first loan. Did you borrow after October of 2007? If so, but you borrowed, let's say, after October 1st, 2007, but before 2014, then this is applicable to you. So if you borrowed anywhere between 2007 to 2014, pay as you earn is an option that you currently have access to, but it may not be an option you have access to after the summer if this new repayment plan is coming out. Now, if you have not enrolled for pay as you earn yet, there may be some reasons to do so, or there may be some reasons to apply for it before we can't, because the one benefit that pay as you earn has that this new repay plan does not have is it has a 20-year timeline to forgiveness if you're doing the longer-term forgiveness. The new repay plan is 25 years if you have graduate loans. Undergrads would still be 20 years, but probably the majority of the people I'd be speaking to right now would have graduate loans. So that creates a need for you to make a decision in the next 5 months to figure out, do I need to switch to pay as you earn if I'm not already on it, to lock in my eligibility and do the benefits of that shorter timeline, the 20 years to forgiveness, outweigh the cheaper monthly payment that the new repay plan may have and the the longer 25-year timeline. So these folks need to be paying attention and need to be making decisions. And then another part of that analysis that we'll be having for future consultations is, if someone is on pay as you earn, again, is that plan better to stick with? Or is the new repay plan going to make sense to switch to, knowing that we wouldn't be able to switch back? Does that make sense how I talked about that? Because I threw a lot of dates at you right there. Yeah,
definitely. There are a lot of dates to consider. So 2007 to 2014 being the first set, if you borrowed exclusively in that time frame, and then if you borrowed exclusively after 2014 being kind of the other big detail to pay attention to. And then the key piece of the puzzle is, we're not exactly sure when this could go away, but it could be as early as this summer, assuming this plan, we're expecting this plan to go into place within the next 30 days. So it goes into play. It could be almost immediate after that, but we think they'll take some time to clean up the overall system. And, you know, they have to give us some notice, but time could definitely be of the essence. And we expect that we're going to be in a situation very similar to the PSLF waiver. We are 10 as a part of the student loan planner team. We were all booked completely. We were opening up extra times. We were working weekends. You know, we were doing the best that we could, but we do have a capacity, and we expect someone's going to hit the button and say, hey, for real this time, it's time to pay your student loans. And also, we did all these new plans, and you guys are going to be like, whoa, come on. Help me. Let me get it together. Don't be that person that waits. Don't be that person that waits, especially if something that we set up to this point resonates with you. Go ahead and reach out to book a consultation, or even just to ask the question about whether it's relevant to you. So one other thing is married filing jointly versus married filing separately, and that being a really big deal as it pertains to consultations right now. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Megan?
Yeah, so this is definitely a topic point that we'll continue to always be talking about when it comes to student loan planning for spouses, because filing taxes separately is what allows you to keep the payment off of just your own income on an income-driven plan. Timing is important with this conversation, especially this year, because we don't know when payments are kicking back on. So that also means we don't know when people are going to have to recertify income. We know that you don't have to before payments resume, but if we don't know when payments resume, does that mean that your payment anniversary date to update income gets kicked to 2024? Do we have to maybe do it at the end of this year? We just don't know. So that is driving a lot of questions about what people should do for 2022's filing. Should we be looking at filing separately for 2022? And that's what's so tricky, because, you know, it may cost money to be filing separately. And if we don't need to be filing separately for 2022, maybe we can avoid it. So a lot of those conversations we'll have in our consultations as well, to talk through the pros and cons, the cost, you know, that you might be able to expect, weigh that against the savings that could reap if you did have to update before you could file 2023 again. So there's just a lot of like strategic planning that goes into our conversations, along with crunching the numbers, of course.
Yes. Don't be the person who waits to the last minute. That is all I am going to say about that. We've got a lot of other things to talk about, though, for sure. Yes. Like you said, this is one mistake we don't want you to make. That was just one of many. The next mistake that I think is really important for us to cover is in the realm of budgeting. So there's a lot of different things that people like to think of when they think of the budget. And I always call it the big bad B word. Like, most people are like plugging their ears. Some people are like, I don't want to listen to this podcast anymore. But the budget is the baseline of your finances. And so if you did not have one last year, you have not had one ever, and you are still trying to figure out how to get from paycheck to paycheck, you're still trying to figure out how to save more so that you can get your home down payment, you're still trying to figure out how to get money into your retirement plan, like all the things, you're like, I can't figure out why. Like, if I earn more money, then, you know, and you always have a reason that your finances are not working. I'm telling you, it is because you don't have a budget. So mistake number one that I don't want you to make in 2023 is just not having one anymore. And there's tons of different ways to do budgeting. It's not one size fits all, but you absolutely need one. Megan, what is your number one tip for budgeting this year like?
Oh my gosh, I love your passion. I always love your passion when we do podcasts together. But you're so right. The budget, and again, that's a cringeworthy word, and there's so many ways that you can make budgeting easy for you. Like, you don't have to do like the really tedious, like budgeting every single category. You don't have to do it that way if that's not going to work for you. You could do, that's called like a zero-based budget or maybe a more traditional budget when people think about that term. But you could do like a parameter-based budget. You know, a percentage of your income is dedicated to fun expenses. A percentage is dedicated to savings. There's so many ways you could do it. We actually have a podcast episode on budgeting way back when. I think me and Rob had done one in years past. One big thing that I see a big, big mistake on is not having a plan for your pay increases for the new year, because most people get some kind of cost of living adjustment or maybe a pay raise that kicks in January and or bonuses. This is also around bonus time. If you're working with a company or an organization that looks at, you know, last year's past performance, those bonuses are coming up if that's the case. And if you don't have a plan for that pay increase and for that bonus, that money is as good as gone, because it'll easily get swept up into spending somewhere. You've probably already spent it in your mind if you don't have a budget for it. So what I always tell folks, and what I think is a good like practice, is take half of whatever extra is coming in, put half of it towards the plan in one form or fashion. This is just a very general way to think about it, but you know, productively put half of it to the plan. So if there's an area that needs attention, like you need to beef up your savings or you need to pay down that credit card, whatever that goal is, put it towards that. Half of what's coming in, put it towards that, and take the other half and treat yourself for the hard work that you took, you know, that it took you to get to where you are right now. So maybe that means you increase your spending a tiny bit by that 50% to treat yourself for the really hard work you did last year, or you take half of that bonus and treat you and your spouse to a nice dinner or a nice vacation. So there's a balance there to where you don't have to be super strict and put it all to the plan unless you want to. But I think dedicating at least half of it could be very helpful.
100%. You know, you said this is the time of the year. And if you don't want to make a mistake to start the year out, then don't blow like what is likely to be the biggest lump sum of money coming in for the year so far. So absolutely think that is something you need to do. But also, I think it's also important to think about working toward your goals. So you've set some sort of goals this year and you want to be able to accomplish them. The easiest way to be able to accomplish them is to have a plan in place, and not to say like, I want to save $50,000. Like, that's a goal. You need action items to be able to say like, how am I actually going to do this? Like, because you got to save a couple thousand dollars a month, more than a couple thousand, really, if you want to save $50,000 this year. And sometimes people don't think about that. They just throw a number out and they're just like, I'm just going to go and I'm going to try as hard as I can. And you got to really know what you're working through. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you get defeated if you don't accomplish it, but you didn't have the right tools or the right map to get you there. And so budgeting really is the way that you can accomplish those things, or at least have a reasonable time frame to be able to expect when you're able to accomplish those things. And sometimes, you know, maybe it's something like, for example, like with my clients, with my coaching clients, a big goal is purchasing a home. And the concern is just, I'm never going to be able to do it. You know, when we first have the conversation, I'm never going to be able to save for that down payment or those closing costs. And, you know, that's very defeating if you're starting the conversation with that, but also like starting to put a plan together, starting to put the numbers down on paper can really make that more like you have a time frame that you can look forward to now. You have goals that each month, this is what you're putting towards savings to accomplish that. And then that can be in and of itself very motivating if you're starting to see progress towards that. But without a budget and without that plan mapped out, then you're probably not going to get to that point unless a really big windfall comes in. But again, we talked about how bonuses could come in and they easily go right back out the door. So yeah, to summarize that little topic is just make sure you have a budget in place for this upcoming year that works for you, and make sure you have a plan for how you're going to be accomplishing the goals that you're working on saving towards.
Amen. Hallelujah. I could not have said it better. I think in the same vein of budgeting, like one of the things you budget for is your debt. A lot of people who have not made a baseline budget are still dealing with debt. And this is the Student Loan Planner podcast. So we assume you're listening because you have at least one debt that yeah. you're kind of worried about. So, but in the debt category, one of the things I think is important, I don't want you to make this mistake in 2023, is leaving a balance on your credit card when you can pay it. This is like my absolute all-time pet peeve, is people come and they're like, oh, I got $5,000. It's no big deal. And I'm like, but you have a $40,000 of savings in the bank. Like, is there a reason that you're not paying the $5,000? Well, sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. I'm trying to improve my credit. I always pay on time every month. That's what I get is the response. Do not leave a balance on your credit card when you can afford to pay it. The whole thing is that you clean it off every month and you don't give the credit card companies any extra interest. So please, please, please. Megan, is this also a pet peeve of yours? Or
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, it definitely is. I tell folks that they're paying a membership fee to that bank if they're paying interest. And there is that misconception that you have to have a balance on your credit card or credit cards to maintain good credit. And that is absolutely not true. You do not have to carry a balance. And just some terms to go back to the basics on, when you get your statement every month for your credit card, you have a couple of numbers that it will tell you. You'll have your current balance, which is right now, as they printed that piece of paper, what the balance was at that time. You have your statement balance, which is from statement opening to statement closing, how much you charged on that card. And then you have your minimum payment. And the minimum payment is very small. It's usually like 3% of what the amount on the card is. Could be smaller, could be just like a set amount. That minimum payment, if you're paying that, that's keeping your credit in good standing in the sense of you're not late on a bill. That's going to make sure that when it looks at your payment history, you're not late. That's a really big part of your credit, making your payments on time and in full. So definitely always, always pay the minimum. But we recommend, you know, not carrying a balance. So you'd want to pay the statement balance each month. The statement balance is, if you don't pay the statement balance, that's when you get charged interest. So if you just pay the minimum, that's great. You know, you paid your payment on time, but you're going to be charged interest. Even if you paid half of the statement balance, you're going to be charged interest on that whole amount that you had on the statement balance. So interest rates on credit cards are not fun either. They're usually between 20 and 30%. And so you could think about it as a 20 or 30% premium on whatever you already paid for on that card each and every month if you're not paying off that statement balance. So it can be really expensive over time. And it's not necessary to carry a balance to maintain good credit. It's necessary to pay your bills on time and in full to have good credit. But there's no requirement to carry a balance.
So please, please, please go make a payment right now. I give you permission to stop listening if you have just been like letting it roll and just giving your money away to the credit card companies for kicks. Don't do that anymore. And to that point, I think, you know, as we think about this, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the emergency savings just a little bit. You know, that's kind of more in the budget area, but it also is your first line of defense when dealing with debt or avoiding debt, I think is probably a better way to say it. It's like, if you have an emergency fund, you can go ahead and use that maybe to pay off something that would have become debt otherwise because something popped up on you because you had a budget. So in general, your stuff was planned for, but the emergency is like when something unplanned comes up. So having emergency savings is another thing that people are just like, I don't want that much cash sitting on the side. I got to make my money make money for me. And they've got whatever they have invested. Emergency savings is a key piece of avoiding going into debt. One other thing, though, before we leave the debt area that is super duper a pet peeve for me is taking on a bunch of high limits. So when I say limits, it's like you may have with your credit card a $3,000 limit. That means you can spend up to $3,000 on your credit card. If you use it quite frequently and they see, you know, you're paying it in full, you're doing pretty well, they'll increase your limit. Well, some people get really addicted to getting the highest limit possible and having as many credit cards as possible because they think, oh, well, it's my, you know, my utilization. If I only got $3,000 and I use $1,000 every time, I'm using 1/3 of my utilization. So I need more utilization. If I got $100,000 available to me and I only use $3,000, my credit's going to be great. But do you actually need $100,000 as a credit limit? Like, right. Why? Megan, have you seen anything like this? And are there any other things we should be thinking about as like someone is really excited about their really high limit on their credit card?
Yeah. So, you know, I totally understand the utilization rate conversation or like point to that. But there should be kind of a, talking about limits, there should be some kind of limit to that in a sense. Like your utilization rate just needs to be, credit card companies or I guess the credit reporting companies love to see it below 30%. The lower it is, the better. So in theory, yeah, the higher your available credit is, the lower your utilization rate will be depending on how much you spend. But it also creates a lot of risk if you have that much available credit across many different cards, because it's usually not that you have one card that's got a giant limit. I mean, you may, but you may also have multiple cards that have giant limits. You know, if you've got a bunch of cards that you're not really using or that you're not paying attention to regularly, that can be risky for fraud if, you know, your credit card number someone got a hold of it and started charging, you know, stuff without your knowledge. Like unless you're paying attention or you have alerts scheduled, which that's what I recommend to my clients, is if you do have cards open that you're not using, you may not want to close it to reduce your utilization rate, but go ahead and lock it to where no new purchases can be, you know, made on that card. Or if there tries to be one, you get an alert. That way you prevent any kind of fraud happening in the future. And another good point is just, you know, I recommend also checking your credit report once a year at least. Just taking a look at what's on your credit report. Does everything look accurate? Is everything on there yours? And catching any mistakes on there. So you could do that on annualcreditreport.com. It's the only legitimate free place you could pull your full report from each of the three credit reporting companies. But that could be a good just credit management thing to keep in mind to utilize in this new year to make sure you're in good standing there.
Yeah, I think you bring up an excellent point about the fraud. Like you said, I have not seen one person with the $100,000 limit. That's probably more celebrity status. So typically, if you've got a really large limit, you've got 5 or 6 different cards, which is just, like you said, a lot more to manage. And I think the thing that you need to watch out for from a fraud standpoint is sometimes the little transactions. Someone will be doing something that I had a Netflix account added. And I didn't, you know, I have a You Need a Budget, so I, you know, categorize every single thing. But this was in a month where I was super busy, and it had been like 6 weeks since I had actually gone and categorized my expenses. And I was like, I don't have Netflix. I have been charged twice now for Netflix, and I didn't have it. So those little things are a lot harder to see and a lot harder to catch when you have a bunch of different cards going on and when you don't have a budget. So, yeah, you definitely want to be mindful if you're spending in all these different places, like, someone can be sliding in $6 or $7 and you just be none the wiser and be paying the bill for them every month. Like, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yep. That's a great point. Awesome. Well, I think we had some great touch points for debt. Let's go into taxes. Everyone's favorite topic, right? Outside of student loans. It's like such a cool topic. I'm just
everybody
kidding.
Loves IRS for sure.
So tax time is coming up. And that means, you know, tax filing, the deadline is usually around April 15th. Remember that your tax return is not free money, right? You typed this on our notes, Lauren. I know you have some feelings about this. Why don't I let you?
I do. I feel deeply passionate about it because I see people on Instagram, you know, kind of YOLOing. I hear it all the time from friends and family members, like, my tax return is coming and then I can ... you know, fill in the blank. Your tax return is money that you worked for that was already owed to you. You over-withheld. You let the government hold your money all year long. They made money off of your money all year long, and you had a smaller paycheck. So you might have some credit card debt because you weren't bringing home enough on a monthly basis. You might have some other things that you wanted to be able to do that you weren't able to do because you had less money coming home. This big lump sum coming is not an opportunity for you to skip over all those things and take yourself on a fancy vacation. This is an opportunity for you to level up in some aspect of your finances. So please do not think that you hit the lottery and pretend that the money just fell out of the air. This is money that you earned and that was already yours to make a plan with. And so continue to follow your plan with your tax return money.
Yep. And, you know, it could be a good time to take a look at your withholdings as well to make sure that next year you're not overpaying. And, you know, I see this all the time where folks will get thousands of dollars back in a return. And it's not like credit money. Like, it's not like a tax credit that they're getting. It's just generally like they overpaid. And so that needs to be addressed when you're looking at your withholdings with your employer. So take a look at the W-4 form this year. See if you need to make any adjustments. Chat with your CPA for both federal and state. Make sure you're not over withholding because that money could be going towards your goals. Just like Lauren said, could be making you money. If you're investing more because you have more in your cash flow, you could be making more money with that money that you're just getting back as a refund. And if you haven't gotten an accountant, so we've talked about a CPA, if you haven't worked, you know, gotten an accountant yet, you are late to the game. This is not the time, well, you could try, but you are probably late to the game with trying to find a CPA. You know, if you're trying to work with a CPA or entertain working with someone to do your taxes, those conversations need to happen earlier on because this is the season, you know, for them to be filing taxes. So if you have not entertained working with someone already, it is likely that they are booked up. They have a capacity too. So don't get upset if you reach out to someone, you know, in April and they say, "Nope, I can't work with you." It's just too late at that point. You got to keep that in mind. So if it's a situation where you really needed to do some tax planning, you have not found a CPA yet, you may want to go ahead and just still engage with someone, maybe have them do an extension for you so where you can't file on time. But if you really needed some of that tax planning to be done, then it may have to wait until after the heat of tax time if you are too late.
Yes, this is also, like you said, a huge mistake that a lot of people make. And this is a mistake I do not want you to make in 2023. Like I said, tax season is right now. So maybe you do TurboTax or some other kind of automated thing this year. And then your whole overall financial situation changes. You're like, oh, maybe I should get an accountant. And then you wait all the way until 2024 to find somebody to do your 2023. You need someone to do your taxes for 2023 right now. Because guess what's happening? All year long, as those different things are happening in your life, someone needs to be guiding you along the way to say, hey, you need to make an estimated tax payment. Here's how much I estimate you should have to pay. It's called a tax projection that they do based on like things that are happening. So we talked about people getting bonuses. Maybe you're a commission person and this is the year. This is the year you want to make that big commission, right? So when that $200,000 extra check, I'm speaking into existence for somebody, comes in, guess what? There's not going to be enough withholding on it. You're going to have to pay estimated taxes and you're going to need an accountant to do that calculation for you. And the last opportunity to pay your estimated taxes for the previous year is in January. So it just passed. I think it was January 16th this year, something like that. And I can't tell you the number of people who were meeting with accountants on January 20 something, January, like, because they're like, oh, 2022 is over. I'm going to start for 2023. And they had no idea that they should have been making a tax payment. So now they're talking about penalties and things like that. And this is a huge deal, like I said, for anybody who's getting like shares, like so physicians in hospitals, entrepreneurs who have to pay quarterly taxes, people with big bonuses. If anything changed about your financial situation or you are a business owner, you absolutely want to be working with an accountant. They will pay for themselves 100 times over because what you miss could cost you thousands and what you don't know could also cost you tens of thousands. So please don't make this mistake in 2023.
Yeah. I love the passion around some of these yucky topics, but we need the passion and we need to address these things so it's not a mistake you make in the future. So I love the recap on taxes. Let's roll into some estate planning mistakes that we can avoid in 2023. So estate planning in general is an extremely important financial planning topic. It oftentimes gets overlooked though, because It's the legal side of financial planning. It's what happens if you were to pass away, or a family member, you know, your spouse were to pass away, or it's if, you know, what happens if you are unable to make decisions because you're mentally impaired or something of that nature. So not having documents in place, if you're someone who has been thinking about this, thinking about getting a will or some of those legal documents in place, this is the year to do it. Let's do it. Let's just rip off the Band-Aid, find an estate planning attorney in your area, and start to put those things in place, because there's no time like the present, especially when tomorrow is not guaranteed. And, you know, it's just a really safe thing to do to make sure that your family is protected, you are protected in certain circumstances. And, you know, things may have changed for you in the past year. If you've had a child or a couple children, if you got married, these are reasons to start having these documents in place. Bought a home, that's another topic. But anything you would like to add to that?
I think that this, like you said, is the wicked stepchild of financial planning. No one ever wants to deal with estate planning. No one ever wants to talk about it. And that's why we kind of sandwiched it in the middle. Like, honestly, in the financial planning pillar order, estate planning is always the last one, I guess, because you die at the end of life. But, you know, most people are like, when are we going to talk about investing? Like, don't worry. We have some investing mistakes that we don't want you to miss. But this is the one that everybody wants to skip over. And I think you absolutely shouldn't. I think by now, you said most of the people listening to this podcast are millennials or older, and therefore they have had someone very close to them pass away. Think about a time when you lost someone that you really cared about. The last thing you wanted to think about was whether or not they had these documents in place, how you were going to find the money to be able to bury them, how you were going to be able to pay their bills while they were in the hospital. Like, a lot of us have experienced something traumatic where we needed the estate planning documents, and it was not the thing that we wanted to have to deal with in the midst of grieving and worrying about a loved one. So don't make someone grieve or worry about you. We don't want to have to do a GoFundMe for your funeral.
Yeah, those break my heart.
It's so sad. And sometimes it's just that the people have the money available, but it's not available. Like, or they have the money saved or in a bank account. Like, they actually could do it, but it's all locked up because they don't have the proper documentation in place. So now someone's having to come out of their pocket, or someone's going to have to raise money and then maybe get paid back later because everything's all tied up in this situation. So estate planning is a key piece of the puzzle, like you said, not just for when you kick the bucket. And a lot of people are like, I'm young, I'm single, I'm healthy, I don't need this. You do. And you don't have to have an estate planner. You can go online and get documents. There's a lot of reputable places now that are doing it. Benella's a company. What's the other one? Trust and Will is one. There's tons and tons. You know, just type in online estate planning. You'll find some options that are available to you. But don't let this fall by the wayside. I've got my documents done. Megan, are you on the good side, or is it a little?
The bad side. I'm preaching to myself. I know I'm preaching to myself. I just got married last year, so this is a big thing for me in 2023 to take care of. You know, we own property together. We plan on building a family together. So this is something that I'm like, I'm listening to you and I'm listening to myself. Like, yeah, I'm one of those that talk about it that need to go do it myself. So check it. You can check me later. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. If you are a listener that ends up with Megan as your consultant, you have permission to ask her. And by the way, did you get your estate planning documents done yet?
Yep.
Accountability is key.
Hold me accountable, guys. Cool. Well, one step I was going to mention, just one step, not the steps, but one easy step you could take to start this process is to review your beneficiaries. You have a beneficiary on all financial instruments in your life. So your 401k, your life insurance with work, your checking and savings accounts. Put a beneficiary on all of these accounts. Make sure it's who you want it to be as well. Don't forget, you know, because there have been situations where, you know, a relationship didn't work out, or there's a new relationship in the mix. You got married, you got divorced. Your child is older now. Like, there are things that, you know, change over time, and you kind of don't think about that. But for beneficiaries, that's a really quick and easy thing to change. Usually you could do it all online through that financial portal, like your online account with whoever it is. Make sure it's who you want it to be. That's a quick and easy way to make sure that assets and things flow to where it needs to flow. And then step two would be go get your estate planning documents done.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect segue into our next topic where we don't want you to make mistakes, because what do people mostly have beneficiaries for, and what do you think of mostly when you hear the word beneficiary? Is insurance and life insurance in particular. You do have beneficiaries for other things, though, to Megan's point. Like you said, retirement accounts, et cetera, but insurance is absolutely one of the things where you want to make sure your beneficiaries are correct, because like you said, you might have gotten divorced last year. You might have had a child and put a trust in place. Simply getting the documents done, that's the last thing I'll say on estate planning, does not mean that you're done. So then once you've created your documents, you need to make sure that the beneficiaries match whatever documents you created. So as an example, on my life insurance, my beneficiary is my trust, because the money from the life insurance will go into the trust and then it will be dispersed as per the trust. If you don't actually put your things in the trust, you just have a trust and nothing in it. So
nothing gets funded.
That.
Yeah.
Right. Don't be that person either. Right.
Yeah.
So on the insurance front, you want to have some life insurance and you also want to have some disability insurance. Don't make the mistake of opting out of your employer life and disability insurance. Like I said, I get this all the time with clients. Like, I'm young. I didn't really know what it was. I didn't want $3 more coming out of my check. No.
Right.
No.
Because it's usually inexpensive.
It's very inexpensive with your employer. They're going to give you a lot of insurance for very little money, even less than what you would find in the private market if you were buying insurance for yourself. So please do opt into your employer life and disability insurance. Megan.
Yeah. So employer life and disability insurance is a great intro to it. That may not be enough. Your employer may have an option to plus up or buy up additional coverage for both life and disability, or maybe just one or the other. So you really want to do an assessment on how much your need really is. On the life insurance side, we have lots of blog articles about, you know, assessing your life insurance need. We also have a lot of articles on disability insurance and how to calculate how much you need there. So disability insurance oftentimes gets overlooked because it sounds really catastrophic. You know, disability is a very aggressive word, but disability insurance really is something that could come into play if you are sick or injured for a period of time. It protects your paycheck. It's more, instead of calling it disability insurance, you could call it paycheck insurance. And I'll pick on just a situation recently I had seen with a client. Someone who I'm working with has to have an unexpected surgery. And they are on their feet. They're a medical professional. They're on their feet all day, every day at their job. They cannot work during this time while they wait for this surgery coming up, and they can't get the surgery scheduled for another month, basically. So this person can't work because they lift and they do things during their during the day that, you know, would prevent them or like really put them at risk for their surgery coming up. So they're not on bed rest, I guess I shouldn't say that, but you know, they can't be going into work to make income. So where is their income going to be coming from? Well, thankfully this person has short-term disability insurance through their employer. So their employer kicks in and pays them, even though they're not going to work because they are preparing for this surgery. They are cleared to not be able to work. So disability insurance, you know, even the short-term disability insurance can be important, but that's also, you know, if you don't have short-term disability insurance through work, you can purchase it, but it's also what emergency savings can be used for. That's why people will recommend like 3 to 6 months of necessary living expenses for emergency savings in case you're not able to work for that period of time. It's a good kind of general rule of thumb on an amount. But don't skip out on the disability insurance just because it sounds like you may never need to use it. Hopefully you don't. But if you do, at some point in your life, it will be catastrophic when you don't have it and you're not prepared for not collecting a regular paycheck.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to that is that a lot of employers don't offer short-term disability. So if you have an employer that does, high five them. Excellent. And if you don't have an employer that does, the reason the 3 to 6 months exists with the emergency fund, where those numbers were kind of born from in the first place, if you've, you know, kind of ever gone online, you see 3 to 6 months of expenses, is because in general, they have this period of time before your long-term disability kicks in. And it's either 90 or 180 in 80 days, which is 3 months or 6 months. So that is where your emergency fund will kick in, and why, yet again, it's important to have one. We don't like to think that we're going to have those kinds of emergencies, but it is absolutely necessary to have funds on hand if something happens like that.
Yeah. So just imagine that for a second. And this is what I tell my coaching clients, like, sit there and imagine if you could not go into work for the next 3 months, what would you do? Because your mortgage is still going to be due. Your insurance payments are still going to be due. Your student loan payment at some point will still be due. You still need to feed yourself. Your kids still need things. So what would you do if you didn't have a paycheck for 3 months? Think about that. And if that makes you feel uncomfortable, that means there might need to be some planning done around that to protect yourself. All right. Now, enough of the doom and gloom.
Right.
Let's talk about retirement and investing mistakes.
Because people love retirement and investing. There's so many people that are listening that are on fire, working toward financial independence. You know, financial freedom is a word that resonates with them. And even if that is not a thing for you, you're just normal trying to make it work, you will need to invest some of your money, because at some point you will not be able to work. You know, most of us are trying to get ahead of the won't be able to work piece of it and want to be able to say, I don't want to work anymore. And so therefore, I have enough money saved to go do all the things I want to do instead. So let's talk about some of the mistakes that I absolutely don't want you to make in 2023 related to investing. The first one, I think that is really the biggest one. This might be the crux of the matter this year. I am so sick of hearing people say that they are not putting money into their 401k. So they misunderstand how their retirement contributions work. And I'm like, well, why are you not putting money into that thing? Well, I don't really understand how it works, and my employer doesn't match. That's like the number one answer I get for why people are not putting money into their 401k. Your employer not matching your contribution does not change the fact that you need to retire and that you need to save for your own retirement. So,
right.
Hate to be the bearer of bad news.
And even like more so than ever, like that is a reason to be contributing more into your 401k if your employer is not helping you.
Yes.
So, because
yes,
it's up to you.
Right. So it's okay to be mad that your employer does not match, but it's not okay to be mad and not put any money in because your employer does not match. You can look for another job that has a match that will help you save for retirement and get you going a little bit faster. But you are ultimately going to have to save, because even if your employer is matching, you're not going to be able to contribute just to the match and make it to retirement. So you're putting in 3%, your employer's putting in 3%, that's 6%. What does that mean? The other 94% of your income is coming home to you, and that's you're spending it. So you're asking 6% of income to turn into 94% lifestyle. Like, not going to happen. You're going to need a much higher savings rate if you actually want to retire.
Yeah, exactly. And the match, you know, it depends on employer, and it's great if your employer has it, but the match does not mean the max, right? We get this a lot too when we have conversations about, you know, how much are you contributing? And I'll get, oh, well, I'm doing the max. I think I've said this on another podcast episode too, but I'm consistent because I consistently hear it. And so, you know, the max is not the match. They sound similar, but they're not the same. Max is how much you can, by law, be able to put into a 401k or a 403b or an IRA. There are limits on how much you are able to contribute, and the max is that limit. You can contribute all the way up to the max as long as you make that much per year. You can contribute up to the max. For 2022, the 403b 401k max is $22,500. I think the boys did a podcast episode on some of these numbers previously. And then for IRAs, it's I think $6,500 this upcoming year. So when we're talking about the match is what the employer contributes with you, or in addition to what you're contributing. Usually you have to contribute for them to do a match, but you can contribute up to the max. The employer's contributions doesn't count against that max. So if you do get a contribution from your employer, they do 3% or 6%, whatever it is, that's on top of whatever you do. And you can do all the way up to the $22,500. So that's something that we do want to clear the air about again, just so we make sure we know that, you know, you can contribute more even if the match is whatever it is, you can contribute up to the max, right?
Yes. And your future self is going to thank you if you can get all the way up to the MAX max and be saving $22,500. Because then it's like, okay, well, what's next? You know, where else can I put money? And it's usually a pretty good indication either you're a high earner or you're a great saver and that you are on track to be able to retire early. So try as a goal to get to the max this year in 2023 or to just increase the amount that you're putting in, because this is a student loan planner podcast. Guess what it does? Saves you money on your student loans. What?
What? How?
How does that work, Lauren? Well, when you put money into your 401k, your normal 401k, not your Roth. Roth does not save you money. Your regular 401k or 403b or 457 plan, all of those things, they're putting your money away on a pre-tax basis. So let's just say you make $102,000 because we got this extra $2,000 hanging out this year. So you make $102,000 a year. Well, you can put $22,500 into your 401k. So what does that do? It brings your income down to $80,000. So now you are paying taxes based on 80 grand as earnings. And when they go to calculate your student loan payment, they're calculating it based on that $80,000 of earnings, not on the 102. So now you saved money for retirement. That money is in an investment account. It's growing. You just saved money on taxes. That's great because everybody's like, I'm tax sensitive. I don't want to give Uncle Sam as any more dollars than I have to. And now your student loan payment is much lower. It's based on 80K instead of 102,000. So you're going to be maximizing the amount of forgiveness that you get and going to be paying as little as possible to your student loans. This is a triple threat.
Yeah, it is a triple threat. You're exactly right. So that's also why we talk about this, you know, in our consultations. Like, we ask the question, like, how much are you contributing? Do you plan on contributing more? Like, these are part of the strategy conversations that we have to help save you the most money on your student loan plan. And the 401k could be a great bucket. And this is not to knock the Roth. I think there are lots of benefits to contributing to Roth. It's post-tax, so there's no tax benefits now, but when you pull that money out in retirement, you're not taxed at that time. So there can be a lot of benefits to having tax diversification in the future in retirement to give yourself options. That's where some retirement planning can come into play. And we could have a whole other podcast episode on retirement planning and strategy there. But so not to knock the Roth, but if you wanted to have the biggest bang for your buck now with the student loans and taxes, the traditional bucket is the way to go.
Amen. Hallelujah to that. And so, like, while there is, like you said, 50 topics we could go through in the retirement investing area, I think, like you said, we just focus on one. Like, you will be better for it this year. So please, please, please take advantage of your 401k. The one other thing I'll say about this, though, is not everybody has a retirement plan available to them. So then what is your option? Like you said, we have a lot of entrepreneurs come our direction. If you're an entrepreneur, that does not mean you don't have to save for retirement. You don't have an employer match. And so to that point, everybody who does have an employer that has a 401k, that's a reason to be grateful. Otherwise, you're going to have to set up your whole own retirement plan like all of us entrepreneurs have to do. So what options do we have? We have the solo 401k, we have the SEP IRA, we have a regular Roth IRA, traditional IRA as options. There's also a simple IRA. So there's tons of other different plans or retirement accounts that you can use, but you absolutely need to look into which one is appropriate for you. So put that on your to-do list. Don't make the mistake of putting off retirement because you're so busy being an entrepreneur. That's what I don't want you to do in 2023. We've got to get saving because as entrepreneurs, we sometimes, you know, put retirement on the back seat so that we can build our businesses. And then we just never get around to opening the account. And then we're behind on retirement saving. So open an account if you don't have one.
Yeah, I get that because you grind for so long. You're investing in your business. You're reinvesting in your business. You need to invest in your future as well. And so that's a conversation you can have with your CPA, with your financial advisor on what type of account could be appropriate for you to open. There's pros and cons to each one of those. And you could also use a combination of them depending on your situation. So the right right combination and the right account itself can be important. And a CPA could certainly help decide how much you'd be able to contribute depending on business profitability and all of that good stuff too. So don't feel like you're alone in having to make this decision. Chat with your CPA or your accountant, chat with your advisor, and you know, y'all could come up with a game plan together. So it's, you're not alone.
All right. We have thrown a lot at you, but it was all because we care deeply about you making good decisions in 2023. There's tons of other things that you can do to optimize your finances, but I think these are some key mistakes that we do not want you to make. So please listen to this podcast again if you need to, in order to be able to optimize your finances. Don't hesitate to reach out to us. If thing number one, mistake number one we didn't want you to make was not booking a consultation when you should. So if it is relevant to you, if you've been putting it off, if you've been listening and taking notes and not actually taking any action, trying to gather all the student loan data, at what point are you going to invest so much time that it would have made more sense to just invest some dollars and talk to a professional and get your plan in place and get moving? So don't do these things in 2023. I look forward to hearing about all the wins that you have because you didn't make these mistakes.
Send us an email. We want to know when you make those wins.
And if you want to send an email to let us know, it's help@studentloanplanner.com. Very simple. So we look forward to hearing from you, and all the best until the next episode.
See ya.